Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, January 21st, 2018. This is episode 1456. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Prices start at just $4 a month. Go to WordPress.com/TechGuy to get 15% off your brand new website today. And by Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that prints your photos directly onto glass, then delivers them to your door, ready to hang right out of the box. Visit Fracture.me and use the code TechGuy15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches, augmented reality, voice assistants, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888, I know, I say it so fast. I know, you're going, I can hear you. Leo, slow down. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Still too fast, I know. But you know what you can do? Go to the website, techguylabs.com, and it's all there. See, I think maybe it's just me. I know my wife's really good at numbers. She says I prefer numbers, 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827. She probably prefers 827-5536, right? She said, I'm good at numbers. I like numbers. Me, I like words. I can remember words. There's a company. It's actually, I want to say a new company, but it's new to me. And it's going to be new to a lot of Mercedes-Benz owners next year, called What Three Words. I love this idea. Instead, you know, the way it works now, if you want to use GPS to locate something, you could enter a street address. If it had a street address, not everything does. Famously, Venice in Italy, they don't have street numbers. I'd hate to be a mailman in Venice. It's the third house on the left past the canal. Take a right at the gondola, and there you are, the red one, not the blue one. That's the kind of, apparently, the kind of addresses they have to do. You could use GPS coordinates. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's 40, 32, 15 by 62, 74, 48. That's even worse. That's worse than a phone number. So I love this idea. What three words? They thought, well, you know what we could do? Some British guys, of course. You know what we could do? What if we divided the world up into 3-meter grids, about 10 feet by 10 feet, 100 square feet, just divided the whole world up into 100 square feet squares. And we assigned a unique three words to each square. Turns out you could do that if you have a vocabulary of 40,000 words. So it's 40,000 by 40,000 by 40,000 would give you a unique location for every 100 square feet in the world. And they did it. And the idea is, well, now what you can do is you can say, well, for instance, our studio, what was it? No, see, I've forgotten already. It's like Brillo nasal tweak or something like that. It was three words: chair, trumpet, window. Three words. And then those three words can narrow it down. You probably want to do the front door because it's actually better than addresses in the sense that you could, you know, say, well, if the back of the place is a different three words, right, than the front of the place. If you go to map.whatthreewords.com. Actually, let me just look up our address. I'm curious now. I'm going to look up my company's address. Glow Walnut Nasal. I'm actually getting they for a fee, or actually for free, they have different signs. They'll print up. I'm getting a sign printed up. I'm going to hang it on the wall behind me. Glow Walnut Nasal. So when you know, now you might say, well, okay, that's great, but who do I say Glow Walnut Nasal to? Well, you could have the app on your phone and say Glow Walnut Wet Nasal, and then it would open Google Maps or Apple Maps or Waze or some other mapping application. It would go there. It would actually set, what it does is it, the What Three Words app looks up the longitude and latitude and then sends it there. Or you, if you have the new Mercedes, I guess starting next year, you press the button, say Glow Walnut Nasal, taking you there now. That's all you, what do you think? Are you better with words or numbers? See, my wife says, no, give me the numbers. I want the street address. But I like Glow Walnut Nasal. Of course, I can't remember it, can I? That's why I need a sign. Oh, Scooter X says it's animation deadline imaged. I guess Glow Walnut Nasal is the back window, the back of the place. Maybe I ordered the wrong, might have ordered the wrong sign. Animation deadline imaged. Thank you, Scooter X. I thought that was kind of cool. I like that idea. Just kind of a different way. Computers, of course, are better, aren't they, at numbers. But that doesn't mean that everything has to be numbers. They're also good at translating things, like words into numbers. This is kind of my philosophy. Let the computer adjust to me. First 20 years of technology, it's really been us adjusting to that. Even with a Amazon Echo, you have to, or a Google, you kind of have to adjust to it, right? I have to say it exactly right. Soon, though, I hope, will come a day where they adjust to us. You just say what you're thinking and it'll understand. Wouldn't that be nice? Speaking of words, the city of, can I say it? I may not be legally allowed to say it. Sarajevo. On the Balkan Peninsula, the capital of Bosnia and Herzegovina, has copyrighted its name. And you can't... Legal and private entities that use the emblem and name of the city of Sarajevo without the permission to do so from the regulatory body or against the issued permission, and this decision about the usage of the emblem, name, and flag of the city of Sarajevo have an obligation to pay for the damage caused by such behavior to the city of Sarajevo. Guess I won't be saying that anymore. They could sue you for using their name. How stupid is that? The Eiffel Tower, same thing. Now, well, it turns out, so the Eiffel Tower, because it was built so long ago, 1873, something like that? That has expired. The copyright has expired to the Eiffel Tower. But they put lights on the Eiffel Tower for the 100th anniversary in 1990 or something like that. So I guess it was 1890 they built the Eiffel Tower. They put lights on it. Those lights are copyrighted. So according to the French court, you could take pictures and disseminate pictures of the Eiffel Tower during the day. Doesn't violate any copyright. But the city of Paris says you can't take pictures of and distribute them for commercial purposes at night because of the lights. Because of the lights. Now, here's why I think it's dumb. You see the same thing, and it's changing. But you go to a museum, and they say, no. You know, you pull out your phone to take a picture. They say, no. And I'm not sure really what they care. Why do they care, right? Well, we want to sell you the catalog on the way out. Well, those are better pictures anyway than my smartphone picture. And what they don't take into account is Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. Isn't it better for the museum and the city of Sarajevo and the Eiffel Tower if people share their pictures on social networks? Doesn't that raise awareness? Here's a beautiful picture of the city of Sarajevo. But I can't use the name, so you just have to guess where it is. You see this? One of the things, I think I learned this yesterday. I've spoken about this before. Technology is changing so rapidly that our ideas are just not keeping up, even in the way we use technology. I talked yesterday to a woman who had a Chromebook, one of these great devices from Google that I recommend for a lot of people because they're very secure. And you don't have to worry about backup because they store everything in the cloud, unless they do have a little bit of memory, like 16 gigs of storage. You store stuff on the drive. And she had done that and couldn't get into her Chromebook. And I said, well, why did you do that? Well, isn't that what you do with a computer? Yes. That's the old way of thinking. We got to think of new ways of thinking. You don't store anything on your Chromebook locally. You store it on the drive. I think we're all doing stuff like that, you know? Dial the phone, kids. No, there's no dial. There's no dial. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk tech, the modern tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. When you call that number, you will be speaking to the fabulous Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're wearing a Viking shirt.
Just for this week and possibly 2 weeks.
Are you
from
Minnesota?
I'm not, but I do have family members and friends from there. So I figured, go for the underdogs, right? Our team's not in it.
Yeah.
We only started winning when Garoppolo got picked up. Why didn't they pick him up at the beginning of the season?
Oh, do you sound like a disgruntled Niners fan?
A little bit, huh?
There's a few of them out there.
A little bit.
Okay, cool. I'll root. I don't have a dog in this hunt.
No, neither do I. And they have never won a Super Bowl. And
yeah,
this is
I like that. They're going to be in Minnesota for the Super
Bowl.
Yeah,
it's their stadium, their new stadium, I guess. So wouldn't that be like...
All right.
Well, and, you know, the Patriots have won enough.
That's who they're playing?
They might. It depends on the outcome of today's game.
Yeah, the Patriots are playing the Jaguars.
Yeah.
The Jaguars have never won either, have they? You see, I'm not really up on, as geeks call it, sport ball.
Sport ball, yeah.
I'm not really up on the sport ball. Yeah. So I should answer the phone because that's what people are here for. And besides, they're all going away in
a minute. Yeah, I think you're going to talk to probably a Packers fan if you like sports at all. But Jeff in Wisconsin.
All right. Hey, thank you, Kim. Hello, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, hello.
How are you? Welcome. Are you wearing your cheese head today?
The season's over today.
Our son is our 15-year-old, for reasons no one understands, is a Packers fan. So for Christmas, he got all this Packers stuff, including a giant rubber cheese wedge for his head, a hat.
Well, you can use it at Halloween time.
That'd sure scare me. Here comes a guy with cheese on his head. What can I do for you, sir?
I have I installed BlueStacks on my PC.
Okay.
Well, I had Windows 7, and then I took the free switch to Windows 10. And we got this big update here, 2 weeks ago.
BlueStacks, we should explain, lets you run Android apps on a Windows machine.
I've got BlueStacks on there.
Yeah.
And I have an app on there called Movie HD.
Okay. That's an Android app?
That's an Android app, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And all of a sudden, it's saying... No internet, no connection. Please try again.
You know, unfortunately, BlueStacks is far from perfect, as you probably figured that out. It won't run all Android apps. And
it was running it.
Yeah,
it was running it.
At one time, but that doesn't mean it's going to continue to. So it can't see the internet. Obviously, your computer can. So I'm not.
Well, then I've got some other apps on there. Mapdoro.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's possible there's a fix, but most likely what this is just what you get when you run BlueStacks. BlueStacks, there are a couple of ways you can run Android apps on Windows. None of them are either approved or reliable. They're funky. And the problem is, of course, that app developers aren't really paying attention, or not too much attention, to BlueStacks. They're paying more attention to making sure it works on all the different Android phones, which is a non-trivial job as it is, because, you know, every Android phone is a little different. So I'm guessing that what happened is something changed in BlueStacks or something changed in the app. It's incompatible. All you can really do is complain to the app developer. Not complain. That's not the right word. And the best place to do it, to put it in the review of the app in the Play Store and say, hey, just a heads up. See, you're not complaining. You're being nice. You're being helpful. I run BlueStack on Windows 7 and it's not seeing the internet. Most likely it's something the developer has to do. almost certainly. It's conceivable that it's something BlueStacks did differently, but in any event, the developer needs to fix his app, is what I'm saying. And that's just, you know, BlueStacks is not going to be the perfect way to run Android. There is really no approved way to run Android. You have to run it in emulation on a Windows machine. Brian Fenimore, Wisconsin, you're next. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
I am great. What can I do for you?
I have a question about the contacts on Android or your iPhone devices. I like my privacy in a way, and I like to protect my friends and family's privacy. And is there any way that I can add contacts on my phone where other apps like Snapchat, Facebook, et cetera, won't steal my contacts?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, you very often see this when you install an app. They say, and Snapchat's a good one, hey, hey, they say, hey, you know, it'd be so much better if you had friends on here. Allow us, and they have to ask permission, right? Allow us to upload your contacts, and anytime one of your contacts joins, we'll let you know. What could possibly go wrong with that? But of course, in order for that to work, if you think about it, they have to not only upload the contacts to their server, take them from your phone, but they have to keep them there and periodically check them to see if anybody from Snapchat that's in your contact list, you know, anybody's joined Snapchat. That is absolutely a privacy breach. And it's not, and you make a very good point, not as to privacy breach for you, but you're giving away the phone number and email of everybody you know. And every app does this. Facebook does it. Instagram does it. Twitter does it. Snapchat. Every app does this. It's insane. So your choice would be to say no. But the problem is, even if you don't, if you're on somebody else's contact list, they can. So the thing that's, I guess, important to at this point, there's nothing you can do to protect that except, and this isn't a bad idea, a lot of people do this, create a phony account. That you give all your friends and family. In other words, don't give them your real phone number. Give them, like, you can go at Google, get a Google Voice number. This is what I do. I love Google Voice. It's free. You get a Google Voice number and use that number from now on. And it will forward to your real number, but at any time you can change that forwarding. Create maybe an email account, perhaps a Gmail account that is only for social, that kind of thing. The problem is you're giving it to friends and you're giving a number that works to your friends. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to call you. So I think that the trick is at this point now to assume if you're on these networks, if you have friends, that your email and phone number are no longer private. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Mike is on the line from Riverside. Hi, Mike.
Mr. Laporte.
Mr. Mike.
Yes, I was just wondering, I seem to do more and more stuff at work than I usually do at home. And just the Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Word, how good is the encryption just to put a password on a document?
It's actually pretty good. It didn't used to be. But Microsoft, like everyone else, has finally cottoned to the security issues we all face. So I would say that they're adequate. They're crackable because here's the problem. It's hard to crack stuff on the web where you can be slowed down. You know, you can't try a million guesses a second. But if you can get a document that's encrypted, that's locked, and own it, then there's nothing to stop you from trying a million passwords a second. You know, there's plenty of software to do that. So that's called brute force attacks. And so the Word document, if you email it, and somebody gets it, they can brute force it because they have, you know, complete access to it. Having said that, Microsoft has started using encryption, strong encryption on all of their Office docs. Let me just check. Yeah, they're using I just wanted to check which algorithm. They're using AES, which is a very strong algorithm. So as long as you're using a good password, that's the weak link, is the password. If you use a dictionary word as a password, or your birthday and, you know, stuff like that as your password, it's too easy to guess. So if you really want to secure a document from Microsoft Office, use a password generator. and generate a long password, as long as it allow, you know, 40 characters. And that would not be brute forcible in our lifetimes and 1,000 lifetimes after that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's the key. So there are good encryption. Encryption, you understand encryption. It's scrambling things. Remember maybe you don't. I don't. But I heard about it. Those encoder rings that they would put in cereal boxes, or you'd listen to the radio. Didn't they, Captain Midnight decoder ring, didn't they have that on A Christmas Story, that movie? The Captain Midnight decoder ring. So that's a simple, that's called a simple cipher. And it's a way of scrambling stuff, but not a very good way of scrambling stuff. If you solve ciphers in the newspaper, they use the same technique. It's a letter substitution cipher. So A is always, let's say, 6 characters down, A, B, C, D, E, F. So A is always F. B is always G. C is always H. You get how that works? You just kind of slide the alphabets one against the other, and you've got a simple substitution. That's pretty easy to solve. They're pretty simple ways to crack it. For instance, we all know that in the English language, the most common letters are E-T-A-I-O-N-S-H in that order, R-D-L-U. Why do I know that? Because as a kid, I loved cracking ciphers. So you look for the most common letter, and that's probably an E. And then you also look for, you know, combinations that make sense, that, you know, you can start to puzzle it together. So that's a form of encryption. It's just not very strong. In intervening years, we've gotten better and better at encryption. Most encryption technologies in the early days used what's called symmetric key. I give you the code, and then you know how to decode it. All just add 6 letters, and that decodes it. That's all you need to know. Symmetric's problematic because not only do you send the encrypted message, but you have to send the code. And if somebody can intercept the messenger carrying the code and the messenger carrying the message, you're done. You've got it. You've got it solved. That's, in fact, how we cracked the Enigma machine, right? We were able to figure out how the German Enigma encoding worked because it was symmetric. More recently, they've come up with what's called asymmetric public key crypto, and this is brilliant. I can distribute a key publicly to anybody that can be used to scramble stuff, and I keep privately to myself the private key that can be used to unscramble it. And only I know the unscramble key. And nobody can get the public key and then deduce what the private key is. It's not possible. Wow, brilliant. So modern crypto uses this public-private key system, and it works quite well. There's no need to send a super secret key over another channel. You just send the public key out publicly. You can put it on a server. You can tell everybody, if you want my public key, it's available on, I put it in my email signature. It's available on my website. You can distribute it publicly, and anybody can use that to send me a private message that only I can read. Oh, I love that. So this is the more modern kind, and that's what Microsoft's using, is a more modern, strong encryption called AES. And I'm sure it's using 256-bit AES, which the more bits, the harder it is to brute force. That's so strong that you'd need a supercomputer to work for 100 million years to break it if, and this is the weak point, you use a good password. So don't worry about the encryption on Microsoft Office. It's good. Worry about your password. Make it a good, long, strong, random password. There are lots of ways to do that. My friend Steve Gibson has a random password generator. Generates a 64-character random password at grc.com. But now the problem with that is you've got to remember it, and it's not memorable. The more random something is, the less memorable it is. And that's what, as soon as you start doing that, you need a password vault to keep track of all that. And you've heard me talk about that before. The next step is to get that password vault. Jim in Riverside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning, Leo. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you, sir.
I have been a student of yours since day one.
Nice.
Yes. I've learned a lot. I doubt that I'll ever graduate, but I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm very, very grateful for your kind words. Thank you. What can I do to help you?
Yes, sir. Well, I was listening to your podcast from, I believe, last Sunday's show.
Yes.
And you had a lady call in. She had acquired a computer from a gentleman. And,
her brother.
Yeah, she already had some files on the computer, and there were questions about permissions and all this.
Yeah.
And eventually you got around to the fact that she should probably reset the computer And, of course, there was a question whether her files would make it through the process.
Yeah, because they're associated with the other account.
Exactly. But you had told her to reset the computer, and you had pointed out that Windows 10 has this great capability where everything is on board the hard drive already. You don't need disks or anything.
Hang on a sec, because we do have to take a break, but I will get your comments in a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls still to come. Sorry. So her, that was my one concern. I can't remember what exactly I said to her. She couldn't get into her account?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure. I would just put that down so that you'd know what problem.
Yeah,
I
remember she got about. Her brother. Yeah.
Yeah, because she already had some files on his computer.
Yeah.
She took it over and it was going to be hers.
Yeah.
She'd be able to get her files.
I wanted her to reinstall everything, I think, right? Exactly. To wipe it clean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this was my question, and I think that this would apply to a lot of people, actually, because you had told her, which was great, I had never heard this, that you could reset the Windows 10 from everything on the hard drive. You wouldn't need any disks or anything else.
Right.
It was all right there already on board.
On her computer it was, yeah. It depends on the manufacturer, but that's pretty much the way it is on all computers now.
Well, exactly, and that's a great feature, but my question is this. We have an old, it's a cheapy Walmart compact laptop, okay? And it's like I said, it's old and it's really slow.
Yeah.
And it originally came with Windows 7, and thanks to Microsoft, I did the update.
Good.
Or upgrade to Windows 10.
Yeah, good.
Well, ever since we did that, it'll take several minutes for each page to open up. Minutes.
Huh.
It's horrible.
So now you want to wipe it and reinstall Windows 10 is what you want to do.
Well, this is my question. Now that it's Windows 10, will that feature still work since the computer was originally a Windows 7?
Doesn't matter, because when you installed Windows 10, they created a recovery partition.
Oh, okay. Well, that was my question.
Yeah. Now, my suggestion, you can try it and see what happens. You can also, here's the good news, you can also go to Microsoft and download Windows 10. You search for Microsoft Windows Media Creation Tool, and they'll let you put Windows 10, a fresh install, with the Fall Creators Update, with the latest update, on a USB key. And you can install from that. If you have any trouble at all with the recovery partition, you can install from that. And the beauty of doing that is you can actually erase, completely reformat, you know, departition, reformat the drive, make it a completely fresh drive, which I suspect will help. I'm worried about the drive. I think that might be why documents are slow to open. So the advantage, the nice thing about Windows 10 is once a machine's been activated for Windows 10, make sure yours is activated, it will always reactivate. You don't have to have a serial number or anything.
Oh, okay. Because so, I always thought you even try to do something like that and Microsoft sends a Gestapo out, you know?
No. They've really changed their tune. They say, well, this is the last version of Windows. They're going to do it more like Apple does it, where you just get free upgrades for the rest of your life. And once a machine is a Windows 10 machine, it's they call it an entitlement. It's entitled to Windows 10, and they keep in their database information, data points about the machine, so they make sure that you're not moving it to another machine. And from then on, it just activates.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that. I just knew that, and it makes sense. They're very strict about letting people get a hold of the operating system.
Yeah, they've always been very worried about that. But this is a new day at Microsoft. It's very interesting how they've changed. So I think you can try the built-in recovery option. It will be there because that's part of installing Windows 10.
Uh-huh.
And it won't be Windows 7. It'll be Windows 10.
Okay.
But if for any reason it doesn't fix it or something goes wrong, you always have that as a backup. In fact, if this is your only computer, before I do anything, I would download the Media Creation Tool and put, if you need, I think, an 8-gig USB thumb drive.
I just bought it at Target yesterday.
Perfect. Put it on there. It's a good thing to have anyway. Everybody who has Windows should have a rescue drive.
Oh, I agree. I'll put it on too.
Good.
Super.
Glad I could talk to you. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Hey, you bet. I don't always get a chance, but it's interesting. And Alexa's here to always help me out with it. So.
Thank you, Echo. Have a great day.
Hey, thanks, Leo. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, buddy. Bye.
No rest for the weary. Time to talk about WordPress. Actually, I love WordPress. I don't mind talking about WordPress. This isn't even work because I am a WordPress fanatic, a WordPress fan. I've used WordPress since Matt Mullenweg wrote it. In the mid-2000s, I set up my first WordPress blog, served it myself for a long time, did the hosting and everything. And after a while, I got tired of, I spent more time maintaining my site and stuff than I did actually blogging. So I switched over to WordPress.com, and man, am I happy. My blog, LeoLaporte.com, is a WordPress blog, but I'm not alone. You know, 29% of the internet is running on WordPress. 29%! That's almost a third. Is some of the biggest publications, some of the smallest blogs, and everything in between. If you have a business, if you would like to blog, you need to know about WordPress.com. It is the best. No experience needed. You don't need to hire somebody. It guides you through the entire process from start to finish. They have great support, 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, weekends too. Their support team, they're knowledgeable. They're friendly. But you probably won't even need it because they take care of all the technical stuff. You just take care of your site, what it looks like, what's on it. They keep it up and running. They keep it patched. You get automatically things like SSL, HTTPS, so you don't have to worry about the security of your site. You get Google's AMP technology. That's just a plug-in. You check the box, turn it on, and then your site loads, you know, like 30 times faster on mobile. If you have a business plan, you can choose from hundreds of plugins and themes. And plans start at just $4 a month. There's a free tier, too, but I am happy to pay. I have the business plan. I'm happy to pay WordPress because I get such great service, such great software, and it just works. 29% of all the websites run on WordPress. Go see why. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/techguy. Create your website. Find the plan that's right for you. wordpress.com/techguy for 15% off your brand new site. I could not recommend it more highly. It honestly is the place to put your website. Absolutely. Don't do what we did for Twit. We paid $250,000 for a site and now thousands of dollars a month to keep it maintained. Go to WordPress. $4 a month. Wish I'd thought of that. WordPress.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. I ended up talking to our caller off the air during the break. It was a very simple question. He has a Windows 7 PC. He had upgraded to Windows 10. Nice. And he wanted to know, he had heard me suggest, and this is good, if you have any problems with Windows 10, the recovery options. If you just hit, if you have Windows 10, actually it's true of 8 too, but if you hit the Windows key, by the way, here I'm going to give you the most valuable tip you'll ever get for Windows 10. You probably already know it, but in case you don't, if you're using a Windows 10 computer or Windows 8 or Windows 7, you know, you have a little, most of them, you have a little key. It's the Windows logo, right? It's that blowing, the window blowing in the wind. Whoosh. If you hit that key and start typing what you're looking for, so hit that key, let go of it, start typing recovery. Oh, lo and behold, in the start menu, it will, as you type, highlight the item. And eventually, if you type recovery, probably even before you finish, you'll see recovery options. Hit return, you're good to go. It's the fastest way to launch documents, websites, or apps in Windows. Hit Windows key, start typing, and it will find it. It's marvelous. Anyway, hit Windows key, recovery, hit return, open the recovery options. You'll see a bunch of them. You can refresh a Windows 10 computer. You can reinstall Windows and save your data. And you can do the most extreme. You can reinstall Windows and wipe your data. All of those options are built in. And then and he doesn't have to worry about it. I think given that he'd upgraded from Windows 7, if he's having problems, a fresh install of Windows 10 would be great. You can do that from that option. But if anything goes wrong, you can also download Windows 10 now from Microsoft. They'll let you download it. You search for Microsoft Media Creation Tool. You need an 8-gigabyte USB key. You can download Windows 10, put it on that key, keep it around. That's your you know, get-out-of-jail-free card. And if something goes wrong, you just put it, you boot to it, you put it in, and you can reinstall, wipe the drive, reinstall Windows, you're good to go. And you don't need a serial number. That's the other question. Because from now on, once a machine is activated as a Windows 10 machine, from now on, that machine can get Windows 10. No serial number required. It'll just say, oh, yeah, I remember you from last time. Once you're a Windows 10 machine, always a Windows 10 machine. Jackie Irvine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, this is actually Ron. I'm here with Jackie. Jackie okay. is a long, long time listener.
Great. Hi, Ron. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hi.
So here's our question. We just got an Aeris Surfboard DOCSIS 3.1 cable modem. I'm sure you know it.
It's the one I recommend and use. Yep.
Wonderful. That's good to hear. Okay. So we have a two-story house, about 2,200 square feet with walls, and we're not getting great signals downstairs with wireless. This is wireless. We're having a hard time with the internet and buffers. Yeah, okay. So we tried to use our Apple Time Capsule 3TB as a router.
Yeah. It's not Apple stopped making those. They still support them. They haven't admitted that they aren't making them anymore, but they're really out of date.
They are. Right. Okay, so here's the question. We're shopping for a compatible router, which I think is what we need.
Anything's compatible. Okay. So what I recommend, especially for people who have problems with Wi-Fi, and there's all sorts of reasons you might have problems. You mentioned the physical reasons, but there's also neighbors' Wi-Fi. There's a lot of congestion these days. And nowadays, because of the Internet of Things and Amazon Echoes and everything, Netflix, we've got many, many devices on Wi-Fi all of a sudden. So truthfully, even the Apple routers, they just weren't designed for the very hostile environment Wi-Fi lives in these days. That's why nowadays people are getting these mesh routers. Now brace yourself for sticker shock because they start at $300. They're not cheap, you know what? It's worth it. Just to go have no Wi-Fi problems anymore is worth it. The mesh routers do a lot of things much better than the old routers. They automatically update. They're regularly updated. And nowadays, with security being what it is, that's very important. Anything that goes on the internet should have automatic updates. They also automatically manage your network. They'll look and see, and they'll say, oh, Jackie's watching Netflix in the living room, but look, Ron is getting email upstairs. Let's make sure Jackie has all the bandwidth she needs, because Ron isn't really going to be, worried if that email takes 5 seconds longer to get in. And those kinds of optimizations, I think, are very important. There are a number of mesh makers. There's lots of them. I should say they are sponsors, so I should give you that disclaimer up front. But I use Eero's, E-E-R-O, at home. And I've talked to many people. They are very robust, very reliable. It's a good company, the E-E-R-O. For a 2,200 square foot home, I would get the base unit, which you'll put next to that Aeris modem. And then you'll get two beacons. That's about $300. Those two beacons, you'll put the app on the phone will help you place them, but you'll put them kind of probably one upstairs and one kind of midway. And what that gives you is strong tri-band Wi-Fi in all the areas of your home. And I think it will solve your problems.
Great. Leo, one more question if I could.
Sure.
Is that comparable with the Orbis?
Yeah, Orbi. You're talking about Netgear's Orbi, probably.
Orbi, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the Orbi. The Orbi can have two base stations, one base and two satellites, but it comes with one and one. So the Orbi's advantage is it's probably the fastest for any individual computer. So if you have a need for speed on one system, there's no doubt the Orbi's the best. The Orbi is not truly a mesh system. It's kind of half mesh, and it is a little more like a traditional router. Now, it's excellent. I set my neighbor up with an Orbi, and he's very, very happy. So I don't have anything against the Orbi. It's a very good choice. If you happen to have one already, go with it. But it's the same. It's basically the same price as the Eero. So the Eero is better for a complex system than the Orbi, I would say.
Okay, now how about for a little less money? I was told by our local electronics store to either get an Asus 2900 or an Asus 3100 router, and that's $199 for the 2900.
They're very good. They're very good. I've used them for years. I love the Asus. I used an AC 3200 for a long time. Actually, we brought it into the studio. We're using it here for a local network. It doesn't solve some of the. First of all, no automatic updates. And it doesn't solve some of these connection problems because it's just a single base station. You can get an extender, but understand how extenders work. They cut the speed in half because half the time spent connecting to the base unit, half the time to your computer. So if you get a newer mesh router, I think they're putting a newer Asus router, they're putting mesh in it. But I'll be honest with you, having used the a very good Asus – and an Eero, I'm using the. You notice I'm using the Eero today.
Eero, okay, and they're all compatible with our.
They'll all work with that modem.
Okay, Aeros and Apple. Okay, great. Yeah.
If you're a serious geek, you know, the Asus is great for other reasons. You can put your own firmware on it. They use open source firmware. There's a lot of cool things about it, but it's for geeks. The Aero is for normal people.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Okay. Leo.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you, Ron. Call me back. Let me know how it worked out for you, will you?
Thank you.
You're welcome, Jackie. See you later. Bye-bye. Line four, Chris. My friend, Chris from Miami. Hi, Chris.
Hey,
Chris. I got 45 seconds.
I love when you do that because I get challenged on a lot of calls throughout the week, and they're like, well, I listen to these people. They're on the call for like 20, 30, 40 minutes, and it's like I get like 30 seconds, and they're like on there for an hour and nothing.
Thank you, Chris, and we'll talk to you next time. No, no.
There you go.
I'm not going to do that to you. Hang on. You'll be my first call at the top of the hour, okay, when we come out of news. We do have to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I knew that was hopeless. That was hopeless. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. Don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. Chris, you crack me up, Chris. You knew what you were doing. You knew. It's all right. I'll bring you back at the top of the hour here.
I won't keep you long, I promise, my friend.
Oh, I don't mind. I like talking to you. What's up? How's everything? So what was that that coffee thing that you posted the other day?
Yeah, you know what? I have I'm a business owner in a company called Sizzle International, and we have the world's best tasting and healthiest cup of coffee.
Is it a franchise? Really is. What is has the deal, or multi-level marketing, or what is it?
Well, it's network marketing, okay. And but the company is owned by Tom Maurer Sr. He's the founder of the company. It's a debt-free company, so he can bring you everything at the prices that are really, really good because he owns everything.
And you have a unique URL for you?
Yeah, you can go to my site. It's really easy.
What is it?
You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Letter C, letter S, letter number 7 dot Sissel, S-I-S-E-L dot net.
So Sissel is the brand, and of course, you're
yes.
Chris yeah. S number 7.
Yes, it's really easy. It used to be longer, but I went with CS7 because it's easy for people to remember.
Is there a dash between the two?
Nope, no dashes at all.
CS7 CS7 S-I-S-E-L?
.net.
Oh, .net. Yeah. I put .com. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. .net. Let me see here.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes this coffee so very, very good?
Well, there is a video on YouTube. If you go and look for it, it's under Tom Maurer Sr. And the coffee is that he buys the number one coffee bean in the world. It comes from Panama. Mm-hmm. And then he brings it in. He quarantines it to make sure that everything is perfect. He infrared cooks the coffee. He owns the coffee process.
Oh, I like that. Infrared, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Infrared, which you've talked about in the past when cooking meat.
Yep. I have an infrared grill, yeah.
And it makes everything much better than ever before.
Yeah, infrared's more even heating, so it would make sense for a roaster. That would be interesting. Yeah.
Well, because most coffee companies, when they do, they over-roast and they over-roast their coffee beans, and you're basically like Starbucks. You're basically left with dead coffee.
Oh, yeah, coffee. Starbucks burns it to death, yeah.
Yeah, they really do.
And then they over-grind
it. Infrared cooks it.
Yeah.
They over-grind it.
All right, I can't get the site. It's CS7S, as in Sam?
Yeah.
I-S-
Seven, yeah, dot
Sissel.
There's a dot in between.
Dot. I forgot the dot. All right. Now
you need the dot.
I think I got it now. Let's see.
You got
the
it?
Magic. Yes.
So, there it is.
Yeah, because I pulled this up when you put it in the chat room, but I wanted to ask you. So they sell it in a box?
No, actually, it's in a bag. They put it in new pouches now.
That's a pouch.
Cold
brew or yeah. what is the deal?
Well, it's not cold brew. Nothing is like that at all. And it's already ground because there's a proprietary grinding process, and then you get the ready brew coffee packets, which it's not. It's called instant, but it's not instant. It's ready to brew.
Oh, I'll brew it. Oh, I get it. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm
but there's a video. You can go to the video on YouTube and put in Tom Maurer Coffee, and you'll see it's in English. He'll show you everything that he does. Incredible.
So those pouches contain ground coffee beans. Ah.
Ground coffee.
Well, I'm going to order some. I'm going to try it. Yeah. As you know, I'm a coffee
I mean,
I'm in the coffee generation. I'm a coffee achiever myself.
Well, 6 cups a day, Leo. That's my deal.
Six? No wonder you're coming out of a cannon at 100 no. miles an hour. Now I understand. Now I understand why Chris sounds that way. Hello, Leo. It's, are you? How many cups have you had so far?
I'm already in 3 cups.
I drink, you know, today I drink 1 cup of coffee in the morning and then usually 1 in the middle of the day. And I today I was drinking Ely Cafe beans because I like that Ely, because that's the Italian coffee bean style that I like so
You can French press this. You can French press this. You can press this coffee.
That's what I do. Yeah, I do an espresso. I have an espresso maker. But Lisa does the... what is it called? I can't remember. AeroPress, A-E-R-O, AeroPress. And okay. She likes that an awful lot, too.
Yeah, you can press the coffee. You can get the fresh coffee, and you can press it. But there's other things on there as well, too. I take the AGE pill. I take the Triangle of Life, and I'm actually getting younger, so. Yeah, there's a lot of different things on there.
Getting younger? All right, well, I'm gonna eat my salad here, but I'll be back with you in about 4 minutes.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you'd like to talk high tech, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you could still call us. Use Skype. Now with strong encryption. Chris in Miami, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got the hellos out of the way. What can I do for you?
Well, I appreciate you taking my call. I wanted to know, I'm looking to get the Apple Watch Series 3, but the iPhone 10 in 256 looks very interesting to me now.
You're going to spend some money, Chris.
Well, I'm just saying, though, it looks like a great idea, but then all of a sudden the brakes were put on because I've read like 3 articles already, a few of them coming from Ki Mao Jun, I don't think that's exactly his name, out of China, saying that Apple is slowing down the production and they might discontinue the product by sometime later on this year. And
yeah, it's I don't buy that. So you got to listen, you got to consider the source when you read rumors about Apple. And in particular, there's a source, and Ming-Chi Kuo is who you're talking about from KGI. Yeah. Securities. Yes. He is absolutely the best connected Apple rumor guy because he's in China and he has his fingers on the manufacturers, right? So that's, by the way, the best way to get information about Apple because you're never going to get it out of Cupertino. But in China, it's a little bit easier to get information. So Ming-Chi Kuo has a very good track record, but remember what his job is. He's a securities analyst. So his job is his audience isn't really you and me. It's investors. And in order to justify their value, analysts, what they're always really trying to say is whether you should buy the stock or not. That's all they're trying to say. Not whether it's a good company, not whether the product's a good product, not even necessarily what's going to happen to the product, but more how it's going to impact the stock. So when Ming-Chi Kuo says what he's really saying is, uh-oh, the Apple stock may have trouble later in the year because we see a softening in sales. That softening has not been confirmed by anybody else. And in fact, I think it's inaccurate. Every metric I've seen shows that both the iPhone 10 and the Apple Watch are selling strong. In fact, the Apple Watch is stronger than ever, which surprises me. And I have to myself apologize because I was a naysayer on the Apple Watch for a long time. But as often happens in technology, as they iterated, version 1, version 2, and now version 3. Actually, this is really version 4 because the first series was nothing. Series nothing. Then series 1, series 2, series 3. They've gotten better and better. And actually, I think the series 3 Apple Watch is really good. I wear it all the time now. And I see more and more people wearing it. So I wouldn't let that stop you. If you're an investor in Apple stock, that's a different matter. Then you might – but then you're also going to know who to listen to and how to interpret what Ming-Chi Kuo is saying. So, no, if you're interested, I think the iPhone 10 and the Apple Watch, you don't have to spend a lot of money on an Apple Watch. You can get the sport model. It's only a few hundred bucks. It's the phone that's going to kill you. 256 gigs is like $1,200, right?
Right.
So you're talking about a $1,500 package here. But yeah. But it is, in my opinion, it is the best 1-2 punch in the mobile industry, without a doubt.
Perfect.
All right.
Then that's what I'll do.
Yeah, don't worry too much about the analysts. I have to constantly, you know, Apple rumors anyway have to be taken with a grain of salt. The company holds its cards really close to the vest. They don't let anybody know what they're doing. So everybody's just reading tea leaves, guessing based on, you know, flimsy information. And I can't tell you how often, and I'm going to say we have been wrong about Apple. Apple continues to just fire on all 25 cylinders. They're just an unbelievably successful and strong company. And even though I was, you know, I called the Apple Watch a flop. I said it was, and I meant not in commercially, but I meant technically, because it was hard. You know, there's the user interface is weird. It's too small a screen really to be useful. But over time, Apple's found, I think, some very powerful uses for it, particularly in fitness and health, not merely, you know, physical fitness, but health. And I think this is going to be a strong contender for years to come. It is the only wearable, really, right now that's doing well. Thanks for the call. It's always great to talk to you, Chris. He says he does 6 cups of coffee a day, and I think he does the first 5 of them right before he calls me. Clyde, Torrance, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Clyde.
Hello, yes. Okay, question about administrator accounts.
Okay.
Okay, I just had to pull the old disk and put a new one in, and I have Windows 10 Pro. I did it from an ISO disk.
All right.
And And I set it up originally, the first one that came up. I set that up for an administrator.
All right.
Not the hidden administrator, and then I just set
they don't. They got rid of that hidden administrator account. That was a terrible idea.
No, I got it on here.
You do?
Yes,
Windows
I added
10?
It later.
Oh, you added it. Well, yeah, you can add it yourself, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but my in-house guru is a degreed person of almost a quarter of a century experience.
Nice. Good to have somebody.
He wasn't really happy about it, but he helped me set it up. But he sent me a thing from, what was it, MUO, saying you really don't need it. So should I just go disable it now?
No. I don't understand why he even worried about it. You're talking about an extra administrator account on your PC.
The hidden one.
Well, I don't know what hidden means. You mean it doesn't have a password?
It does. I put a password.
As long as it has a password and it's a good password, have as many as you want. We used to say, and it's not bad advice, certainly if you have a teenager using a computer, make sure they don't use a administrative account. They use a standard user account.
Yeah, but, well, that's what I have for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
The ones I'm adding on, my spouse.
I don't know. You have to have an administrator account on your system.
Yeah.
You can't not have one, or you wouldn't be able to install software.
That's
so
right.
I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Well, anyway, I have the one that I started up with, but it wasn't the hidden. It was not the hidden one.
Yeah.
But I added the hidden one. But should I keep that or?
It's no harm to have it. You don't need it because all you need is one. But
yeah.
No harm to have it. You can have as many administrator accounts as you want. They don't, as long as the passwords are good, that doesn't make your machine any less secure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I got a question about that. I use names, my name and my spouse's name. I give.
Hang on just a second. I hear the magic music, which means, unlike the Golden Globes, I actually have to shut up. We'll be back in a minute. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, Clyde. I had to take that break, but go on. Continue, please.
Yeah. Well, we have our own. We have our. We share accounts on our computers we have our own accounts on each one in case something's down.
Yes. Good.
But should I use names like that? I thought about just using objects or nouns.
No, it's fine to use names. it'll be what I don't want to have is a call from you in 6 months saying I can't remember what object I used.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Make it easy on yourself. Windows is so much more secure than it used to be. Frankly, I use my Microsoft account as a login, and then I assign a PIN, which Microsoft lets you do, and that way you can easily log in without having. And so that it's important to have a long, strong Microsoft password, which I do, and then the PIN just makes it easy to log in from time to time.
Okay, that's the other question. Do I need that Microsoft account?
You don't need it, but there is advantages to it. For instance, when you go to a new machine or buy a new machine and log in with that account, all of your settings will copy over.
Yeah. Well, when I set my wife's computer up a couple years ago, I didn't want to confuse her, so we just went. Well, our ISP is Earthlink.
I'm a big fan of not confusing users. Because a confused user is a dangerous user.
Yeah, well, I know.
Make it simple. Now, I'll tell you why. I understand why your friend is worried about the hidden administrator account. It has higher privileges.
Yeah.
But than a normal administrator account. But you don't use it. You don't stay logged in it, right?
No.
No, it's there for troubleshooting, and that's completely fine.
Yeah.
Just don't. If you're going to make it a hit, if you're going to re-enable the hidden administrator account, don't use it day to day. That would be dangerous.
No. Yeah. I know I've listened to you enough on that.
Yeah.
But it's just there.
Yeah.
And I only log in on regular accounts.
Right.
Good man,
Clyde. You're doing the right thing there.
Well, one of these last articles I read said you could rename it the administrator account.
I guess they're thinking, well, what if somebody gets on your system?
That's exactly what he told me, and I read the same thing online.
Yeah, but
hackers go for it.
As long as you're not using monkey 123 as the password.
No.
You've got a good password. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I'll be honest. If a hacker is on your system to the degree that they can try that login and work and bang on it or attack you through that account, you're out of luck anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to a GRC and generate some new passwords.
There you go. But make sure you record them somewhere so you don't.
That's my problem. Where do I record them and where do I hide them?
Well, I use LastPass, which is a password vault system that I really like. But if nobody has physical access to your office, it's not a shared system.
Oh, no.
You could put them in a notebook and put it in a drawer. I was at the store the other day and I saw a notebook that says on the front, passwords. That's probably not a good idea. But since nobody's going to be in your house, put them in there. It's fine. And then that way you'll always have them.
Well, you never know who will break in. But
well, if you're really worried about that, LastPass is a very secure online way to do it. Do you use a smartphone?
Yeah.
So you can have LastPass on your smartphone when you're logging into your computer. You just take out your phone and you look up the password. But I think a notebook is fine, too. As long as you make sure that access to that notebook is limited, there's no reason not to do it. Don't put it on post-it note on the screen. That's all. Hey, nice to talk to you, Clyde. Thank you. We have Tom is in the studio. He's a photographer. Beautiful pictures. And you said you discovered Fracture?
Yeah.
Have you printed some stuff with it?
I have.
Oh, I love this. See, here's the problem. We all have pictures we love, right? But when they're digital, they live on the hard drive. And you never see them or you'll see them once in a while. They really should live on your wall, right? If you have a great picture, even one, that you just never want to forget, or a family picture. Here's the best way to get them up on the wall, looking great, something you'll be proud to have that'll be a great reminder of that wonderful event or those people. Fracture. Fracture is a photo decor company that's out to rescue your favorite images from the digital ether. They print your photos onto, get this, glass. And there's something about putting an image on glass. The contrast, the colors, everything just, it's magical. It comes to light. People will come into your house and say, oh. I mean, really, the pictures are breathtaking. They can range in size from 4.8 by 6 by 4 inches. It's like a little print like that you'd get at Costco or something, to giant poster size, 21.6 by 28.8. This is an 8 by 8.5 by 11. This is a picture I took of my son's graduation dinner. You can get them in portrait. You can get them in landscape. They even have a square format. Great for your Instagram pictures. In fact, you can print directly from Instagram or from Facebook. So it makes it very easy. You can have borders and not have borders. They have an advanced editor that lets you modify that. I like to put black borders on mine. I don't know why, but I just do. Here's the biggest size. This is the poster size. Oh, boy, is this big. It's one of my favorite pictures I took this spring in the Galapagos. Look how, I mean, you can't really tell probably on the stream, but it really comes to life. You got to see it in person to get it. Every fracture handmade in their factory in Gainesville, Florida, from U.S. source materials. It's carbon neutral fractory, they call it. And I love this, too. They ship it, they never break. They ship it with in these really clever cardboard inserts. But the insert has the hanging hardware, and the image is printed on poster board. All right. So it's, you know, it's backed. And then it has a hook, a hole for it. So it's all ready to go. You put it right up on your wall directly from the package. Fracture. I love my Fracture images. We've printed, I don't know, more than a dozen images now at Fracture. And I think many more to come. Anytime we go on a trip, we go, okay, what are we going to put up on the wall this time? Fracture.me. If you use the code TechGuy15 at checkout, you'll get 15% off your first order. And if they ask you, I think they do a one-question survey. If they ask you, tell them you saw it on the Tech Guy or heard it on the Tech Guy, and that'll help me. Fracture.me, TechGuy15 is the offer code. Really a neat way to put pictures up on your wall. And I just want to encourage you, it's another way to become a great photographer, is just to keep your eye peeled for that image. And everybody's got, you know, at any moment, one or two that you just go, yeah, I would like to see that every morning when I get up. Or put it in your bathroom. Well, I like to see that every morning when I go to the bathroom. That's okay, too. Fracture.me, offer code TechGuy15 for 15% off your first order. I love our fractures. We have them at home. These are special sample editions I keep at the studio. Somebody said, well, why don't you take them home? Well, I will someday, but I have copies. Don't worry. In fact, we sent out that one of the graduation pictures. Everybody in the family got one. It was awesome. I don't know what they make them out of. They hold up really well too. Did you hang them in the house, Tom? Or
not yet.
Yeah, you're gonna like. Do you like them?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
I gave them for Christmas.
Yes, it's a great gift, and they have a money back guarantee, 60-day happiness guarantee. So you don't have to worry if you don't like them. Fracture.me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Clyde was asking an interesting question, and I did a little research. He said, I have the hidden administrator account. That way, now, that goes back away. In the I can't even remember. Was it XP? I think it was XP. We learned that there was an administrator account on Windows, almost all Windows PCs, that had a blank password. And so if you forgot your password on an XP machine, no problem. Just log on as administrator with the blank password. It was hidden in the sense it didn't show up in the list of users, but it was there. That's gone. But there is an advanced kind of administrator account that is not normally enabled on Windows 7, 8, and 10. But you could turn it on if you wanted to. His friend said, oh, don't turn that on. Yeah, I mean, the risk is it's a very powerful account. It's more powerful than just a regular administrator account. But for that reason, it's useful if you've got problems or you need some troubleshooting. So I will put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com on how to enable the hidden, I guess we'll call it hidden administrator, the built-in administrator mode in Windows. It would be my advice not to turn it on unless you knew you needed it. And maybe even disable it after you use it. But it's a nice thing to have. Just don't have a blank password, okay? I'm pasting it into the show notes right now so that people know how to turn it on. It's kind of useful. Kind of a useful tip. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Holly in Los Angeles. Hello, Holly.
Oh, hello.
Oh.
I'm so glad I got you.
Hi.
I call.
Oh, thanks for calling.
I have a question about my memory having to do with Google Drive. I have a fellow that helps me when I get into trouble with my computer. And I called him because it seemed like I was having memory issues. It seemed like I was trying to save things and it wouldn't seem to save.
Okay, I'm gonna halt you for a moment. Nothing wrong with what you're saying, but I just want to make sure that people understand, because there is a difference between memory and storage. And so the convention that we geeks use, when we talk about memory, we're talking about RAM. You know, you have 8 gigs of RAM in the computer. That's the fast memory that data sits in when you're working on it. You're talking about something called storage, which is where you put your files when you save them, right? It's either local on your hard drive or, in your case, on Google Drive. So just for clarity's sake, I'm going to call it storage. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I appreciate you, because I didn't even know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, it's very common, and only geeks really make the distinction. But it just helps us understand what's going on. So are you worried about your storage?
Well, I started having trouble saving things. It seemed like when I would save them, I would have trouble bringing them back up again.
Okay.
And that was literally like a week ago. So I was having these issues, but I need to go back just a bit and tell you that about a year ago, I was taking a class and working with some other people. Actually, I had to submit something to a teacher that was big, and I couldn't get it through the normal way. So he asked me to put it on a Google Drive and send it to him, which I did. So up to that point, I didn't have Google Drive.
Isn't that cool? It's a great way to share stuff. Yeah, we do it all the time.
It worked out really well.
Yeah.
But I thought that was the end of it. And then more recently, like maybe about 2 months ago, I was taking another class and had to share some things with people. And that came up again. And someone said, oh, we can do it by Google Drive. And somebody put it on my phone instantly at that point, and I put it on my computer, and it worked all right to use for that. But then I started having trouble on my computer, not trouble, but I started noticing that the little icons that were on the desktop, they would have like a check or an X on them. That I didn't know why that was there. I mean, things started changing a little bit on my computer. And then last week, I started having these storage issues.
This is at the beginning of the show, I was talking about how times have changed, but our conventions for understanding what's going on haven't. And cloud storage is really a different beast than local storage, hard drive storage.
Right.
So that's what you're running into now. You've kind of got a mixed system where some of the stuff is in the cloud up on Google. By the way, it doesn't have to be Google. Dropbox, OneDrive from Microsoft, Apple has iCloud. There's lots of systems. It's the same idea. It's a hard drive on the internet that you're storing stuff on that you have access to.
Okay. And so it worked well for those situations. I assumed that what I put on Google Drive was the only thing that was on Google Drive.
Well, it sounds like somebody installed something for you, or maybe you did. Google has a Google Drive synchronization program, and that's what those check marks and X's mean, I think, is that these have been backed up to the drive and these haven't. Do you now have a folder on your computer called Google Drive?
I do.
Yeah.
And I don't think I put it there.
No. Was somebody installing this on your computer, or did you just follow some instructions, or...?
I usually have someone do that kind of thing for me, but I actually did this one.
Okay. Sure, so you don't need to use Google Drive. You can just do it by uploading files like you would upload files to any service. And then you don't have any presence for Google Drive on your computer. But I don't think there's anything wrong with this. There's a nice little program that you can download for free from Google that will monitor a folder and automatically back it up to Google Drive. It's kind of a backup system.
But you know what? I think, that's the evolution of what's happened here, and that's why I'm having trouble, because however it was downloaded when I did it, what I now have learned that as I'm having these storage issues now at this point, that I did have my guy come in, and I called him to see if he could come, and I started saving, rather than even trying to save it on my normal, like save it to documents or something on my computer. Instead, I just put it on a flash drive until I got this kind of straightened out.
Yeah.
When he came, he looked at my computer. He did get rid of a few things, which helped some memory issues, but he said that the Google Drive was now, like anything I've saved, apparently in the last year, anything from like a recipe, downloading a recipe to anything, like every photograph that I've got on my computer, it's all on Google Drive, apparently.
Yeah. Okay.
And so now I'm having problems, even though my computer has more memory, my Google Drive does not. And he said the problem is that it's in such a way that if you delete something from Google Drive now, it also deletes it from my computer, my documents. Like if I take a photograph, I don't need all this stuff on Google Drive. I just need the few things that I was sharing with those people. And now my whole computer's on there. And now it's not that my computer has storage problems. It's that.
So at some point, you or somebody decided to move stuff off your computer, your local storage, onto Google Drive.
Well,
why you have more space, right? You have more space on your local. Do you have more space on your hard drive now?
Well, he got rid of some things that he deleted, but it didn't really solve the Google Drive problem.
Somebody installed Google Backup and Sync, and it is backing up. And you can go into your computer and look at the settings of Google Backup and Sync and see what it's doing, see what it's backing up. You can also see whether it's deleting files when you delete them from Google Drive or not. That's a setting.
You can change
that. It shouldn't be doing that. That's not the default setting. So it sounds like somebody's messing with you a little bit, messing with your system a little bit. And that's the problem with having a local expert who doesn't fully communicate what's going on. Hang on the line a little bit, and maybe we can tease this out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm still a little confused, but I think that's because you're a little unsure about exactly what happened.
Right, so, and I'm sure that I did it. He didn't. He wasn't involved in when I downloaded the Google Drive.
So Google Drive is, think of it like a backup solution. You can have it on your computer. In fact, you're a Windows machine?
I actually have a Mac, but this is on boot camp, so I'm using the XP, the PC side of the computer.
Okay, so this is on Windows. So mm-hmm. It's in the system tray on the lower right-hand corner, you know, where your clock is. There's little icons for all the programs. One of them, it'll look like, I think, a little puffy cloud, is Google Drive. And you can right-click on that and open the settings or preferences. I'm not sure which they call it.
Okay, Backup and Sync? Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
So that's why you see those check marks. The check mark means it's backed up to the cloud. The X means it's not yet backed up to the cloud.
Backed up all kinds of things I didn't want, like Quicken Reports. I was doing anything I saved the computer also went to Google Drive.
Yeah. Well, sorry, but you installed it.
I know.
So now you can look at the settings and see what you did. So in there, you'll see there's two parts to the Google Backup and Sync program. There's one part duplicates. This is really confusing, and you can blame Google on this part. One part is how your Google Drive is synced to your computer, and that is a folder called Google Drive. But the other part is what parts of your computer get backed up to Google Drive. That can include you must have checked documents, which means everything in your documents folder. You must have checked photos, everything in your photos folder. All of those, without your knowledge, have been copying up to Google Drive. It shouldn't erase anything locally. It's just making a duplicate. The good news is that's a backup. Had your computer died, you actually would have a copy of everything. The bad news is you didn't know you did it.
Right.
And you pay for Google Drive after 15 gigabytes, and that's why you're running out of space. They're going to say, you need to pay us a little bit. The good news is it's not really expensive. It is a backup solution. So it's not a bad thing. What you do want to do is turn off the setting that says when I erase something on Google Drive, erase it locally. You don't want it to do that.
Okay.
That's the one that's causing you fits because stuff's disappearing, right?
Right. If when I tried to delete it off of Google, then I delete it off of everything.
You don't want that. I'm just looking at my Google because I do this too. I like it. Google Drive and see if where that is. I'm looking. I don't see. Let's see here. I'm going to put it up on the screen so people at home can see it as well. Show warnings when you remove items from a shared folder. You'll probably turn that on. Open backup and sync on system startup. That's already on. Sync my drive to this computer. And then there's the one that's my machine. And there's boxes checked there. You can uncheck those. And that will stop backing them up. Here it is. Ask me before removing. Okay, so there's a removing items section. And you want to select don't remove items everywhere or ask me, but you definitely don't want it to be remove items everywhere. 'Cause that will not do what you think. Now, remember, that means removing them on Google Drive as well. But you can always go to Google Drive and delete stuff manually on Google Drive if you wish. So this is okay. You just added a huge amount of complexity, but there is an advantage to it because now you have Google Drive backing up your computer.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a great thing. As long as you understand what you're doing. Hey, I'm sorry to say I have to run.
No, absolutely. I appreciate your help. Thanks so much.
I hope that helps. call me back, Holly, if it doesn't, okay?
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. It's time to talk photos. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is here from discoverthetopfloor.com. Trained professional and outstanding in his field because he likes to take pictures out there. Hi, Chris.
I do. I love to take pictures any time of the year, in summer, in winter, in spring, in fall, whenever.
All you got to do is call.
If I have a camera.
Chris will show up. Well, what do we want to talk about today? Chris is here every week to help us get better pictures with our camera phones or our digital cameras.
I want to talk about photography in winter because I did a family Sunday winter walk today in the afternoon.
Oh, what fun.
And it was so beautiful, but at the same time, the lights and everything is so different that I wanted to talk briefly about some creative challenges when shooting in winter, some technical challenges, and one super hot tip that can help everyone.
We need a super hot tip in this cold winter. Is it snowing at the Viewfinder Villa? Do you have snow on the ground?
Not right here, but where we went, it was plenty of snow.
Oh,
so
nice.
you have a few creative things that you have to kind of master or at least kind of know about in order to get better photos. The first is skies. Skies in winter often don't exist. They're gray. They don't look any good. They are usually not nice in photos. So tip here, don't make them prominent in the photo. Reframe the photo so the sky is simply not in there. The other thing you can do is you can embrace the gray. You can, for example, there are variances in the brightness in the sky, and you can use that later in post-processing. If you are into post-production on your photos, Lightroom and stuff, try to raise the contrast in the sky with a brush, with a graduated filter, just to tickle out these differences in the brightness, and that might look really cool. So there's one way to save a very dull gray sky. That's the first thing. Second is a lack of color. It often looks like it's black and white, like you switch your camera to black and white. I often look for single individual like subjects that are colorful that will break that. And then you have these color key pictures, Leo, the ones that you have like a red rose in a black and white photo, for example.
You can kind
of get these without having to do anything because you have this colorful thing in the photo and the rest is automatically black and white. Looks very, very cool. Or add in color yourself. Get some like a sheet of ice and then behind it you put something colorful and that will shine through and that will give you an interesting look. So color is something to think of, especially when there is not a lot. Lack of contrast is your third and biggest challenge often because every light seems to come from everywhere. You have an overcast sky. The ground might be white from snow and then light reflects and it's like no shadows, no nothing. And that can be kind of dull unless you embrace that. For example, if it's foggy outside, you might have a beautiful picture of a solitaire tree in a landscape, something that sticks out and the rest is kind of non-existent, which makes it really interesting. Also, low contrast opens up a huge playground in post-processing. As I said with the sky earlier, if you are into post-production, into brushing in different contrasts in pictures, try these post-processing techniques with a picture in winter that doesn't have a lot of contrast.
If a sky, though, is uniform gray, is there really...
Well, it isn't. That's the thing. There is often kind of very tiny variances in brightness. And if you bring that out, if you paint in, or if you use one of those graduated filters, you can bring out the sky and you will see those differences if you really, really push it hard.
I'm sure you cover this in your Discover Lightroom series.
Of course. Yeah. Oh, of course.
Hey, I finally gave up on the new Lightroom, Lightroom CC. I finally tore out my last hair and went back.
Where did you go?
I went back to Lightroom Classic, which they still offer, but who knows for how long.
Which is Lightroom as we kind of knew it.
They redid it, and it's awful. It's awful. I wanted to give it a chance.
Plastic is the same as you had before. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad they still offer it. Of course, it's slow as molasses. I bought an iMac Pro. I thought, well, it'll be fast on this. No. Still slow as molasses.
I have a suspicion it's not the iMac Pro that's the problem.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. So I'm a little disappointed, but I still need to do that processing. I'm going to keep looking for alternatives, frankly, because I'm disappointed with what Adobe's done. But if you still use Lightroom, Discover Lightroom, Chris's series is just the best.
Everyone's looking for alternatives at this point.
I know. I was wondering. So you agree?
Well, I still use it because we talked about this a few weeks ago. I have an investment. I have put a lot of pictures in there. I have a lot of edits in there. I have my muscle memory on how to edit photos in there.
That's why I can't use the new good Lightroom. Yeah. I have to use the classic. But that's true. A bad sign when they label something classic. you know it's not long for this world. Hey, let me take a break. We have an assignment. Any other tips you want to give for photography on a winter's day? These are great. Just even less of the sky. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
One killer tip. Just a few seconds. One killer tip.
Yes.
Get up early. Try the early hours. I know it's hard to get up early, especially when it's cold outside, but the frost on the leaves, fog standing on fields, early morning sunrises, lighting the fog from behind, that kind of stuff is magical. Yes. And that is so hard to get, or impossible to get in the evening, which is much easier, but at least much, much easier to get up. Get out half an hour earlier than usual, and you will be rewarded by amazing photo opportunities.
All right, Chris, we have a minute and a half left to talk about our assignment. Every month, Chris gives us a new topic to shoot. No prize, no money in this, but we ask you to upload your picture to Flickr, and Chris will judge them at the end of the month. What is our assignment this week? This month?
The current assignment is repeat, as in the new year has started, and we're repeating a bit of a cycle here. So it's the new year, we repeat. So repeat whichever way you want to interpret this.
I like that. So take a picture. You can upload a fresh one every week to our Tech Guy group. It's on Flickr.com. Join the Tech Guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you. And make sure you tag your picture repeat so we know that that's a submission. And in about 3 weeks, right? Chris will do a little critique. That's actually a really valuable thing. It doesn't have to be formal, even informally. Getting people to say what they think about your picture, it's hard.
You know where the secret is?
What?
You know where the secret is? If you give the critique, you learn more than the one who receives it. So everyone should critique other people's pictures as well.
Help other photographers. Yeah. Well, you helped me a lot, and I appreciate your friendship and all the information. Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. And where's the Lightroom book so people can get that?
1hour1000pics.com.
Okay, 1hour1000pics.com. More of your calls right after this. Actually, it's all linked to Discover the Top Floor. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, we have to stick an ad in there. I will normally try not to, but that sometimes happens. So.
That's okay. I'm flexible. You know me. I'm flexible.
You are. You're very flexible.
We will run this and figure this out. Okie dokie.
Thank you.
I will be back next week.
Great. Have a great one.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Line two, Stephen in Los Angeles. Hi, Stephen.
Yes, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great.
First of all, let me thank you for taking my call.
Of course, thank you
for calling. I truly appreciate that because I have a question here. I've been doing some research for many, many months on the best battery charger in the world that I could possibly find.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one that I found that would be considered, in my opinion, the best in the world, and unless you know otherwise, I will value your advice, of course. There's a company called SharperImage.com, and they're based in the USA.
Oh, I'm familiar with them. In fact, I thought they were out of business. Okay, good. I'm glad they're still around. All right.
Yeah, they're still around.
Okay.
And they sell this item called the Universal Battery Charger. And the Universal Battery Charger regenerates virtually all household batteries, including disposable alkaline batteries and rechargeable Ni-MH batteries, whatever that means, and rechargeable Ni-CD batteries.
Yeah.
It has four charging docks that can charge up to 4 batteries at a time, yeah. even if they're different sizes, and they can recharge AAA, AA, C, and D, and 9-volt batteries. And they can recharge the alkaline throwaway batteries, such as the Energizer and the Duracell kind.
They can recharge alkaline batteries?
Yes, they can recharge Energizer and Duracell batteries from 75 to 90% many times over for wow. a great period of time.
That's news to me. Wow.
Yes, and it's the only one in the world that can do that because I've researched every kind on the planet. Because when I do research, I spend a great vigorous amount of time researching things before I choose to buy something. And it has a lot of great rating reviews. It has a 5-star review of this product. They have a website, Sharper
Images. Let me just ask you how much it costs. That's really the bottom line.
Well, I did research on that, too.
Well, all you have to do is look in the catalog. What are they charging for it?
Well, sharperimage.com, they have an online catalog, and they sell it for $59.99.
Okay. I'm not going to recommend it, only because you're never going to see any nickel-cadmium batteries anymore. NiCads are gone. Almost everything you use today is NIMH, nickel metal hydride. There's no conditioning needed or necessary with nickel metal hydride. And it is a bad idea. I'm actually surprised it's even possible to recharge alkaline batteries. Recycle them. You can get much less expensively a very simple nickel metal hydride recharger, which is what you should be getting. Go to thewirecutter.com. They have a review of nickel metal hydride battery rechargers. The one they like is from Ever... I think it's EverReady. This is off the top of my head, but you can easily find out at thewirecutter.com. It's $15. There's even a good deal. There's one that comes with 4 Eneloop batteries, I think for $21, that gives you – the batteries normally are more expensive than that. So I don't honestly think you should buy this one. But if you like it, knock yourself out. For the rest of us, go to thewirecutter.com. I'm going to put a link in the show notes for their battery reviews, battery recharger reviews. NiCads just are gone. If you still have a NiCad device, wow, then maybe you do need a NiCad charger. The problem, there's a lot of lore about batteries that hangs on from the NiCad days. The NiCad suffered from something called the memory effect. If you didn't charge them all the way, if you pulled them off the charger early and then started using them, they'd remember their last charge and start thinking of that as a full charge. They really were it was a terrible technology. You couldn't fully discharge them, or they never charge again. There were all sorts of reasons not to get NiCads. Fortunately, they were replaced by nickel metal hydride, which suffers from none of those effects. Nevertheless, you'll still read about reconditioning batteries and you know how to fully discharge and fully recharge battery. You don't have to do any of that anymore. And most of us now are using, in most of our devices, except for the ones with removable batteries, lithium-ion batteries, which are even better and less susceptible to this. So that sounds like a fine thing. This isn't the Sharper Image that was started by Richard Tharmeyer many years ago. They went bankrupt in, I think, 2008. Somebody came along and bought the brand. I guess they've kept the catalog alive. Even then, even under Richard, it was kind of glitzy, but maybe less than superior products, shall we say. Kind of gimmicky, you know. So this is a gimmicky product for a, frankly, too high a price, $59. Thank you. The rest of us, thewirecutter.com. Moving along, let's see. Next, Brad in Canada. Hello, Brad.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. Thank you, sir. What can I do for you today?
I'm a huge Windows 7 guy, and I know what's going on regarding the Windows updates and stuff. And I really don't want to migrate to 10. And I've, listened to your show all the time, and, I hear it's not that bad a transition, but then I read... sometimes.
Well, there's, if you have 500 million users and 100 million of them go to the new operating system, even if 1/1000th of 1% have problems, that's hundreds of people posting problems on the internet, right? So it's easy to get them a apprehension of what's going on. I think Windows 10's upgrade is, for almost everybody, straightforward, easy, and it's a great operating system. All right, I'm going to leave that. Continue your question. I just want to make sure people don't.
And yeah, I have great. I finally went to paid antivirus because you know, all my free versions let me down, and I was compromised. It even messed my Wi-Fi up, my modem. It opened a port, my Wi-Fi, and it exposed my password of all things, which was kind of weird. But anyways, that's all patched. I'm doing, you know, a great company paid, and I'm happy, and I'm not worried. Should I be concerned that I'm not getting Windows updates at this time?
Yes, you're not?
No, I still can't get over that. Like, it says my Windows is not running at this time if I try to run it.
Is it the antivirus that you're using? Because that can block it.
No, even prior to that, when it first, you know what, I did sign on to that after.
So, I don't recommend third-party antiviruses at all. One of the reasons. You are less secure. That free one, well, at least you didn't pay for it. What if the paid one does the same thing, which it will? Then you'll be really sad.
When I shut them down, they were really lagging my computer. I had to actually uninstall.
I'm not going to talk you into it, but I don't use an antivirus. Windows comes with one, including Windows 7. You have to go to Windows Microsoft.com/Security Essentials to get the free one. That's the one I'd use. Antiviruses are a nightmare. They cause security issues. They block updates. You're much less safe if you don't have updates. That's terrible. You got to fix that now. You don't know. You're a sitting duck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, more of the tech guy in just a bit, but first a word from our sponsor, the fine folks at Quicken Loans. You've heard me talk about Quicken Loans. I always think of Quicken Loans Arena, right? Is that Cleveland? I think that's where LeBron plays. But it was actually, Quicken Loans was actually started in the 90s by a guy named Dan Gilbert. It was called Rock Mortgage at the time, I think. Quicken bought it, named it Quicken Loans. 3 years later, Dan says, I want it back. I know how to run this business. And you know what? He was right. He kept the name, but he is running it. And he's an amazing entrepreneur. They're headquartered in Detroit. They've transformed the landscape in Detroit. He's really doing a lot to revitalize the urban downtown in Detroit. But more than that, they've built an amazing business. They're the number two lender in the country now in terms of number, you know, amount of loans, I think $92 billion. And the number one is a big bank that you know the name of. But the thing is, they're number one in customer satisfaction. And that's really, in fact, it's rare that you get something that's the biggest and the best. That's Quicken Loans. Number one for the last 8 years, 7 or 8 years running in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, in mortgage approval. Last 4 or 5 years in mortgage servicing. They're really great. And they've created a product for us geeks. They're really technically savvy. They realized that the mortgage approval process was really kind of stuck in the 19th century. It needed a customer-centric, technological makeover. So they created something you could do on your phone, you could do on your browser and your tablet, that lets you apply for a loan really simply. So simply that you can do it like at an open house on your phone. You don't need any paperwork. You could just, you know, answer the things like your name, address, birth date, social, that kind of thing. Stuff you know off the top of your head. They have trusted relationships with all the financial institutions, so they pull all the information they need. You don't have to go to the attic and get pay stubs and check statements. They get it automatically. They get it all with your permission. Crunch the numbers, and based on your income, your assets, and your credit, they'll make you an offer. And this is all happening in a minute, like right away. Like at the open house, you could say, I want to buy this house. Let's buy this house. And then, all right, well, we need a loan. All right, well, let's go to Quicken Loans. Let's go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. And boom, you know, you say you choose the down payment, the rate, the term you want from the loans that they offer you. Those are the ones you qualify for. And that's it. You're approved. They even have a button. I love it. It says, if you're a realtor still living in the 19th century, press this button and print out the letter that says you're approved. Otherwise, you just hold up the phone. Well, I'm approved. And that makes a big difference when you're buying a home. Oh, they also do refis. And I think this is going to be a big year for refis. Interest rates are starting to ratchet up again. Quicken Loans Rocket Mortgage. And by the way, I didn't know, I wasn't thinking, but then when I found out that the name of the company originally was Rock, I realized that's why they call it Rocket Mortgage. Clever. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. You could bookmark it, or actually, you could go, even if you're not, you say, well, I don't know if I want to buy a house right now, or we're thinking about refi, just go and sign up. You don't have to go through the process, but you'll have the account ready so that if the time comes, it literally is like, boom, instant. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. From Quicken Loans, it's the best. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. And we thank them and all our sponsors for making the Tech Guy podcast possible today. Thank you. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, hot coffee, all that jazz, all the geeky stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number to call. Good time to get through. I think, I don't know, is there something going on today? People watching football or something? I don't know. It's a good time to get through. 8888 Ask Leo. Isaac is on the line from Ontario, Canada. Hi, Isaac.
Hi.
Welcome. How old are you?
I'm 14.
Nice. Are you a geek? It's okay. It's a safe space. You can admit that here.
I guess so.
Ah, you see? Nobody's going to laugh at you here. We're all geeks here. What can I do for you?
So, first of all, before I ask my question, does the repeal of net neutrality affect Canadians?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. No. Well, no? Yeah, okay. Yeah, yes and no. Of course, it's a U.S. Regulation that has been repealed. Yeah. But the state of net neutrality in Canada isn't all that great either. So you should, as a geek, make sure that you, you stay in touch with your, what do they call them, member of parliament?
I have no idea.
You don't know. Well, I don't know either. Something like that. You should stay in touch with your elected officials and make sure that you promote it. The problem is, of course, as you know, living in Canada, as the U.S. goes off and so goes the rest of the world, if, you know, companies practice predatory practices in the United States, mm-hmm. that could absolutely affect you, but not directly, because you don't have the same internet service providers we do. Now, my experience with the internet service providers in Canada, as you know, I've spent a lot of time in Canada, is that they're not great. In fact, Rogers, for instance, I know shapes bandwidth to prevent good Skype calls. At least that was my experience for a long time. We used to have a show host who was in Canada, Amber MacArthur, and her call after about 58 minutes would start to degrade. And I know exactly why, because Rogers said, you've had enough Skype time. TELUS very famously did similar things. So it's the state of net neutrality in the world is at jeopardy, because if you think about it, it makes sense. These big companies are very, very wealthy. They, in any democracy that allows campaign finance, you know, contributions, they are going to have an undue influence, I think, with members of parliament and members of Congress. And so it's going to be difficult to get your voice heard. But that's why we as geeks have to stand up and say, look, we want a free and open internet. That's what got us here. And that's what we need. You don't want these big companies to decide winners and losers on the internet. You want the market to do so. And I think that that's pretty safe all over the country. So there is a battle going on in Canada. People are looking at a CBC article from the end of the year that says the net neutrality fight hasn't been as fierce as the ones in the U.S. It's not as politicized, I guess.
Yeah.
But still, you know, you really want to protect the internet, and it needs to be done globally. And we know many countries where it's not being protected: Turkey, China, Russia, where government is, keeping the internet from being free and open. It would be a shame if in the free world, in the free countries, industry made it less free and open. That would be a certain irony up there. Yeah. So the answer is no, it's not the same, and we're not going to affect you, but you should still fight for it.
Yeah. And also, so my question was, does it affect mobile data plans?
Well, that's an interesting question, too. It does. It affects all internet access. Historically, in the United States, mobile has been treated differently than land internet.
Yeah.
Even Google said, well, you know, the technical details of mobile make it very difficult to have net neutrality on mobile. There shouldn't be any net neutrality regulations on mobile. I'm not sure I agree with that. Here in the United States, and I think this is true in Canada as well, some of the carriers do something we call zero rating, which on the face of it sounds like a really good thing for consumers. They don't charge you bandwidth charges for some services.
Yeah.
On T-Mobile, a carrier down here and also around much of the world, if you listen to Spotify, it doesn't count against your data. Now, you might say, well, that's what
to do that too.
Yeah. You might say, well, what's wrong with that? That's great. And it's true. Consumers love it. I'll tell you what's wrong with it, though. It means that the companies that don't have that favored status, in effect, cost more, right? They're going to cost you. And so you're going to be less likely to listen to the next Spotify, the young, up-and-coming new music service. It's going to entrench Spotify and make it difficult for anybody else to succeed against them. And that's anti-competitive. So that's another form of net neutrality that happens on mobile, or anti-net neutrality that happens on mobile. It's, you know, it's going to be very interesting. Here in the United States, we're talking a lot about the next generation mobile service called 5G. That, by the way, is also something going to happen in Canada as well. It might happen faster in Canada because the mobile carriers don't really – they're going to pay a lot of lip service about how great 5G is. But the problem with 5G from their point of view is these unlimited data plans. When people get really high-speed data on their mobile devices, they're going to consume more.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We don't actually have many unlimited data plans here.
That's a good thing. Unlimited data is a lie. It just means your carriers are more honest. It's not unlimited. As soon as you get to a certain point, they slow you down.
Yeah, we have certain carriers here that do that. Like there's a carrier called Freedom. Used to be called Wind.
Mm-hmm.
They do plans like normal. They're actually a lot cheaper. But then they'll stop after your limit. So let's say it's 5 gigs. After 5 gigs, they would throttle it to the point where you can't even use it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not unlimited, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is technically. Well, you still can have more bits. But yeah, they don't call it that. Here in the United States, they call that unlimited. but it isn't really. After 5 gigs, it's not usable. So I think that's a limit. You know, I am thrilled that you're interested in this kind of stuff. I mean, most kids your age are into, you know, making YouTube videos and Minecraft and Call of Duty, and I'm sure you're into that too. But it is important.
No,
I'm glad you're thinking about things like telecommunications policy. I would also say that I've given you my opinion, but that's my opinion, and you should research it. You should find out. You need to form your own opinion from the facts, not from other people's opinions. So, so look at the facts. Look and then make your own decision. But I'm glad you asked me because my opinion is right. Just kidding. Okay. I'm just kidding. It's great. It's really great to talk to you. Do you play video games at all?
Actually, no.
Yeah. Well, that's good. What kind of computing stuff do you like to do?
I like to do a lot of stuff with Photoshop and things
nice.
Like that.
That'll hold you well when you need to get a job.
Yeah.
There are a lot more jobs doing graphics design than there are playing Minecraft.
Yeah. Or even UX design and stuff like
nice. That. Nice. Well, that's great. And I think it's really important that you keep up on telecommunications policy as well because, you know, it's not going to affect my life that much. I'm coming to the end of it. I got the benefit of a free and open internet for 20 years. It's going to affect your life a lot. It's going to affect everything you do for the next 50 years. So it's really important that you pay attention to this. And I know you're too young to vote, but that doesn't mean you can't be active and participate.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
I think Justin Trudeau, I think, is on the right side of net neutrality. He said, here's a quote from an interview he did late last year. Net neutrality is something that's essential for small businesses, for consumers. It's essential to keep the freedom associated with the internet alive. That's the right That's the right answer. So you've got a good prime minister. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Take care, Isaac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, reaching out, hands across the border. They don't have the same Title II issue in Canada because obviously they don't have our Telecommunications Act and all that. But the law in Canada treats ISPs as it should, as utilities. And that's exactly how it should be. That's the problem in the United States. The FCC wanted to treat them as utilities. The carriers wanted to be treated as information services, and they won. That's essentially what happened when Ajit Pai overturned the net neutrality regulations. He said the decision to treat broadband providers as utilities was wrong, and I disagree. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. Scooter X in our chat room reminds me I should buy a share of Apple stock right now. Part of, you know, my own internal kind of non-compete clause is that I don't buy tech stocks because I don't want you to think that I care. I have any financial stake in any of these companies. I care most about whether the company serves you and me, not whether I'm going to make money on it. But if I were to have even one share of Apple stock, then tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., I could get in the lottery to go to their shareholder meeting, which is being held for the first time in the brand new campus, the Steve Jobs Theater. That is a beautiful theater. For some reason, Apple won't let me in. I don't know why. I'm never invited to the Apple events anymore, so I don't get to see the theater. But this is one way I could get in. Would you understand if I bought, you know, what is it, $800 a share? Maybe it's not worth it. Of course, I could just sell it and make money later. Yeah. But then this whole integrity thing would be out the window. If you've got a share, don't forget, you'd have to come out to Cupertino next month for the shareholder meeting. But you'd get to see the new campus. $176 a share for Apple?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cheap. You see, I really don't know. Really? Is that all? I thought for some reason it was a lot more. Dan in New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Leo. Great to listen to you.
Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.
I have a question. I have an elderly aunt. She lives in Florida. I am in New Jersey, far away. She is kind of a recluse now. She lives by herself in a small home. And she's kind of afraid of people in general. And
by the way, she's living my dream. Someday I hope to be where your aunt is, a recluse in a small home in Florida.
I know. It does. It sounds good from the outside.
Yeah, but I understand. You care about her.
And, you know, the last time I visited her, she had a TV that she hadn't turned on in like years. And we turned it on and it didn't even work. It just blared noise and, you know.
She happy?
Yeah, well, she's afraid.
Afraid. That's not a good reason. That's not a good reason. Yeah.
And so what she wants is, or what we're thinking about trying to help her is she has a hard time getting up to answer the door. It's locked. And she locks it from the inside, too. My sister visited her once for, you know, a few days, and she had to, like, go to my aunt and have her get her key and unlock it from the inside.
She's got it deadbolted. Wow. Okay.
I mean, like, really bad. So you can't even undo the deadbolt.
Now, so she's basically, is she agoraphobic? She really is afraid of going out.
She doesn't really like to go out. She's got some people now who are kind of to help her, and they take her out occasionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's usually reluctant to go.
I understand.
So anyway, in the short term, because there are many issues involved here, I would like to have some kind of a button that she could push that would unlock the door to let people in and out.
Totally doable. She doesn't have any internet?
No, not at this point, unless we decide to get internet just for this.
Yeah, you might. So remember that you don't just want that. You really want a camera and a microphone out there, too, and a speaker. Because you want her to be able to look, see if who's there before she pushes the button. And say, who's there? And here, and make sure they're okay before she pushes the button.
So, exactly, because otherwise we were thinking they were going to have to phone her and say, I'm outside.
Well, if you'd be willing to do that, then you wouldn't need to get Wi-Fi, because I think there are locks that work via Bluetooth. If she's within 100 feet of the lock, she could open it with a Bluetooth device. But if you want a camera, you'd need Wi-Fi to do that.
Right. Okay. So that's good. I had never thought of the camera, so I will.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're willing to say, well, you know, put a sign on the door, if you want to get in, call me.
Right.
I think that's kind of good. I like that.
It's cheaper.
I'm taking notes for my retirement. That's I like that.
Yeah, exactly. So,
go away, and if you have to come in, call me.
Right.
All right.
There's a payphone across the street.
So a number of companies make these kinds of locks, these automated locks. All the companies that you know, like Schlage, make locks. The problem, of course, is security. And unfortunately, especially with Bluetooth, we keep seeing issues with security. But so you want to make sure if you get a lock that you get it from a company that is going to stand behind it and give you updates and all of that stuff. It's really important. Quickset makes one of the original Bluetooth deadbolts. It has a combination on the other end, which might be a good solution for your family because they could have the combination. And even if she deadbolts it with a key from the inside, it is a deadbolt. You could use the combination to open it. And she could push a button. August is very well known for their smart home stuff. They make a lock. And, of course, Schlage, which is one of the best known names, they also make a lock.
I have a Schlage that I use at my home that goes, you know, works with my
Well, there you go.
With HomeKit.
Yeah, it's HomeKit compatible, which is nice.
TV, you know?
Does she have a smart phone?
Well, that was the part two is she has nothing of the sort. You know, she's in her 90s and just not up to date on anything. You know, we're lucky that she got a new TV. So
there are Bluetooth only that don't use Wi-Fi. August makes one that's Bluetooth. That's probably
a push button device or something.
That's the issue. Is you know, they just assume everybody has a smartphone.
Right. Exactly. It's all based up on that. You know.
Yeah.
Originally, I suggested you have a button for the garage door. You know, you could just let them in through the garage. But even then, I mean, she's pretty smart. I mean, she's afraid. What if the garage door gets broken? Then she's going to have an open garage door. That freaks her out more than just her regular, door. So it seems like we're going to somehow she's got to have a more complicated device to operate this.
Well, I'm just looking. I mean, if you had one that just was like a garage door opener that pushed the button,
exactly.
I'm sure somebody must make that.
They have those old time buzzers, but they usually are wired. It would be better if it was wireless. Otherwise, you know, it used to be, you go into the dry cleaner and the guy lets you in, pushing the button and you open it.
Yeah, of course. God, we've had those for years. A wireless
of
those. That might be, that might be a better way to do this, which is to do an old-fashioned analog wired remote release door lock and then make the button Bluetooth. This would probably be cheaper. It would be more reliable because there'd still be a physical wired button. The trick is going to be, and I think this would be a simple thing for somebody with your obvious technical acumen to do, is to pair it somehow to a Bluetooth device that would control that button. Here's somebody in the chat room suggesting. I think it's a really good idea. Call an independent alarm company in her neighborhood. Because you're going to want them to install it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And they will know what's out there, what's available. They'll probably try to upsell you with some other stuff as well. But they at least, I think, would have a better idea of what kinds of things would work. I like the wired idea if you could just make the button remote. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I bet you could do that. I really do. I bet you could, almost an aftermarket. Because that button is a simple thing. It just closes a circuit. It wouldn't be hard at all to make a switch that's Bluetooth powered that closes a circuit.
Yes. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Probably beyond, at the moment, that's beyond me. Usually I have a way in my head I can think how I would do it.
But I could talk to these guys. Maybe they have.
They're going to come down. They're going to install it. You're not going to want to maintain it from New Jersey. You want to have somebody down there that will kind of keep an eye on it. I'm just looking. Yeah, there are. It's a little bit of a makery project, but not that makery. That would see if this will do it. I'm looking for something that might do it, but
it's just got to be simple.
Yeah. You know? She wants something basically a garage door remote that opens her front door.
Exactly.
Why don't they make that? That seems so obvious.
I called Schlage once, and they didn't know, they couldn't help me. Because I just need that device, that simple. It should be a device that comes with it besides the phone, just like a button to push, But anyway, otherwise, if we went all out internet, then I would get, the camera, maybe, and she could.
Well, there's an advantage. This is what I want to do for my mom. She's 85. Very similar situation. I don't want to have to get up. Mobility's hard at that age. She's mobile, but, I don't want to have to get up and go to the door if it's just some salesman.
Exactly.
So having a camera and a microphone and a speaker there is great because she could say, go away, without getting up. But you need a smartphone. Now, what you could do, of course, is get her an inexpensive Apple, one of the iPod Touches that
that's a good idea.
Yeah, it has Bluetooth, it has Wi-Fi, it has all the stuff you'd need to do this. The camera would show up on the screen. She would have to install Wi-Fi in there.
Right.
But that's not a bad thing. And, as a gateway to her maybe getting more involved in the outside world, once she's got Wi-Fi, then you can get her an iPad. My mom loves her iPad. And then once you get the iPad, you can, FaceTime or Skype her. And suddenly she's a little more connected. You can slowly ease her into the world this way.
I've got an old iPad, too, an iPad 3.
Same thing. That'd work. That's fine.
I probably can. We don't really use it anymore. It could go to her.
There you go.
I mean, she could even use that, but she'd have to carry that around, which wouldn't be good for opening and closing the door. But it would be great to have. At least it would expand her internet use if we.
Well, and also, if you really want to go crazy, if you get one of those Schlages and an Amazon Echo, she can shout, "Echo, open the door!"
Right, and we just got an Echo too.
Echo will work with these devices. So you can, almost all of them, you can say, open the door.
That would be the best thing.
Wouldn't it?
It's pretty sensitive, too. You could probably yell, open the door.
Oh, yeah.
Room.
My mom loves her Echo. She's found 100 uses for it I never even thought of. She times the shower to get hot. She sets a timer.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, she uses it like crazy.
Your brother's in Rhode Island, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, my parents are in Rhode Island also.
Oh, neat.
So that's good. That might be a good thing, actually, the Echo. She's got good hearing, so that's good.
She needs Wi-Fi. She needs, but once you get Wi-Fi, then now you can do anything. There's nothing you can't do.
Exactly.
You could have a Ring video doorbell. You could have a Schlage lock. The doorbell and the lock work together. You literally can say, Echo, who's at my front door? You get a picture of it if you have an Echo Home. Or you could she could have it show up on her TV, too, by the way. And then you say, okay, turn on the microphone. Go away. Or open the door. It's my very nice nephew.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for the call. I got to run. All right.
Thanks
take care. My
lot.
Pleasure. Leo Laporte, the recluse tech guy. What's wrong with that? Live in a small house in Florida, stay home, read, watch TV. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, the TV's broken. No big deal. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. As long as I've got my computer, I'm happy. I can surf the net. I'm happy. Let's go back to the phones. And on the line from Ridgecrest, California, Dave. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hello, Leo.
Hello, Dave.
Hey, one problem with that Echo opening the door.
Yeah?
Somebody could do it from the outside.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, it'd be pretty hard unless you just have the screen door open. Then you're right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. That's a good point.
Anyhow, I got a problem here that just cropped up last Thursday. No, actually, Friday. I'm sorry. I have a Mac, and I've had my Gmail in my favorites on the Safari. And last Friday, the progress bar would come up, get to about 90%, stop, and just stay there.
Yeah.
And it's been doing that ever since.
And so the page never loads.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the browser itself loading, or not the whole operating system, just the browser. Does the rest of the Mac work?
I mean, on the internet.
Okay.
I get plenty of action on the internet.
Well, I don't want to hear about that, but okay. I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing you.
Email through the Apple Mail.
Okay. So it's just that it's just Gmail that won't load.
Yeah. And I tried their, helplines. That's a farce anymore.
Oh, yeah. There's nobody home.
You never get anywhere.
Man, it is let's be honest. It's a free service. I mean, it's not like, you pay for it. It sounds like, and you're using Safari?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're up to date, right? You're not on an old version.
As far as I know, it is an old machine, but it's been working fine.
Yeah, yeah, no, but Safari does get updated. Make sure you got the latest version of Safari. It might be that you need to just reset or clear Safari. Sometimes it sounds like, remember that Gmail is funny. Gmail was really the very first web application. It is more than just an HTML page. It's really a fairly hefty program that you're running, and that's why you see that progress bar. And what's happening is it's not fully loading and running.
Yeah.
So you could try a different browser, but I think the problem is really that you need to clear Safari's caches and memory. This is not unusual. So you can go ahead.
I hate to admit it, but I don't know how to do that.
Oh no, of course you don't. That's why I'm going to tell you. You go to the history menu.
Yeah.
That's the fourth menu in.
Yeah.
And you're going to see an entry there that says at the very bottom, clear history. But you're going to do more than clear history. Once you clear all, when you select it, you're going to take it to a clear history menu, and then you'll click clear all history.
Yeah.
And it'll clear the history, but it will also clear the cache. And when it does that, it depends on which version of Safari you may actually have a reset Safari. Let me see where the reset Safari button is, because that's kind of what you do. Now, remember, you're doing this. History is not a big deal to clear, but you may also be clearing other stuff. So make sure you save your bookmarks out if you want to keep those.
I've done that clear several times.
Okay.
Before.
What you want to do is clear website data as well, because the history isn't the problem. It's the website data. You can also clear the cache in the preferences. So go to Safari Preferences.
Yeah.
And there's an advanced section at the very end, that gear.
Yeah.
And let's see. They move this around all the time, and it looks like that has been moved. There used to be a clear cache. But again, this is going to be, because I'm using the latest Safari, this might not be the same as you have. If you have an older computer, you might not be using the latest Safari. There's also in preferences an extensions button, and you're going to want to turn those off. So these are all things that modify a vanilla Safari to make it less reliable. I'm thinking probably the cache is the big thing. Now, R. Chandra is pointing out in the chat room, this is certainly a temporary fix. At the on the Gmail page, there's a button that says HTML only. Now, that's a much more primitive version of Gmail, but that will at least let you get into it. It's the program, the JavaScript that's running, that is almost certainly causing Safari to choke. And, cache is now moved to the privacy section. Of course it is. Where else would it be? So go to Safari Preferences, and go to the privacy section and you'll see a clear cache button. I think that's the number one thing to do. And that won't change any of the behavior. When you go back to sites you've visited recently, they'll be a little slower as the cache gets reloaded. But I'm betting you that's what happened, is that something got corrupt in the cache for Gmail. Cache is actually used in computing in all sorts of ways. It's an area in Safari's case, or any web browser's case, where the browser saves on your drive images and data and big JavaScript files, so that when they go back to that web page, they can just load it from the cache. But see, if that gets damaged, that's exactly the result you'd get. You'd get a halt in the load. It would say, oh, I can't, something's wrong here. So clear that cache. I bet you that's it. Again, that's in Preferences, Privacy. Look for the reset cache. Mark, Northridge, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, hi, Leo. Nice to talk to you. I'm a big fan of your shows.
Thanks. Thank you.
And I got an idea for you to get to the Apple event, a petition.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work. I don't think they listen. No. I don't know what I did. At some point, I just annoyed Apple, and they decided I was not a friend. And, you know, oh, their private business, they get to invite just their friends to their parties. It's okay. Why?
Get Leo in.
You know, if somebody doesn't want to invite you to their party, you don't want to beg. You just say, okay, fine. I don't need to go to your stupid party. Hey, we got to take a break. Hang on. I will answer your question when we come back from the break. I don't want to go to your stupid party. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're winding it up. I can tell from the music. Final moments. Winding down. The tech guy show. Mercy, mercy me. Thank you to Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning the hits today. And, of course, Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. Winding up the Tech Guy show for this weekend. I think we started talking to Mark, but I didn't finish. Right, Mark? What can I do for you today?
Yes. I bought a Netgear Nighthawk X6 a couple
Very
months
nice.
Ago.
Very nice. Love that router.
Okay. Well, I loved it, too, until I started getting emails saying you need to do your firmware update, and I did it with the Genie, and it wouldn't work, so I have to call customer support, and they were helpful, and they're pushing buying a service package for a year or 2 years. You pay $129 a year.
That's outrageous.
Like that. Yeah, and I started thinking about it, and I go, I just bought this darn thing. And I know you recommend a different router.
Well, the reason, and this is exactly the reason that I'm always talking about these mesh routers, is that they just update themselves. It just happens. And that's, frankly, nowadays, on any device you connect to the internet, that's a must. That's not even an option anymore. And for them to say, on a $200 router that you have to pay $129 a year for service is insane.
Right, and here's the thing too. And I said, well, what if I get 2 years? They'll give you a deal because they just helped you out, and they said this is a special. But then they say, and then I said, okay, how about the router itself? It's got a year warranty. What happens to the router after a year if it breaks? And you still got service, but you don't have service on the hardware. It's all compute. I should have bought a different one.
they're great routers, and I'm sorry you can't update it. It should just
No, I did update.
Good.
They were helpful. I was able to update it. I got to be on the phone for a while and everything. And I actually listened to them, and I was excited because it was finally done, and I no more email. I'm done. But then two things come up. One is, I don't want to worry about these things. I want to do is and also, do they all just give you 90 day service? Do they if you have a problem with a router?
Yeah, no, they don't. I do think that this is a trend in the industry only because support is expensive. You know, one support call, you spent how long? An hour?
Well, yeah, probably about an hour.
Yeah, so that cost them probably, you know, $50, $100 bucks. There goes the entire profit on that router.
Yeah, you're right.
Right?
You're right.
And so we expect as consumers really cheap gear now. Frankly, we do. Yeah. And I know when I tell people I'll get an Eero, it's $329. They go...
No. Take it from me. One problem would
say,
why didn't
it? And Eero's, you know, I've called, and again, Eero's a sponsor, but I've called Eero's support both with a real problem and a fake problem. And in both cases, they were great. They stayed on the line with me till it was fixed.
Yeah.
And they didn't charge me extra. Now, even Eero is starting to have, they have Eero Plus now that you pay a subscription fee for filtering and stuff. But the basics are included, as it should be. I think we as consumers just have to say, look, yes, we're going to pay an appropriate, fair price for a product and then expect fair support for free.
Yeah.
If you want free support, you're going to have to the money comes out somewhere. You're going to have to pay more for the product.
Yeah. That's a good point, but it's also one thing I would like is not to worry about it. If you do a firmware, just do the firmware.
But that's the point too, is that especially anything that goes on the internet, but especially your router, which is your front line, that needs to be patched regularly. We've learned that now. Routers have been used multiple times. There was something called the Mirai worm, which a couple of college kids from Rutgers created that took over the internet, almost brought the internet to its knees using routers that had a hardwired password. You couldn't change the password, and they figured it out. They got into the routers, millions of them, and they almost brought the internet down. This is not okay. So you nailed it. Do not, from now on, everybody, do not buy a device that goes on the internet. I don't care if it's your phone, if it's your router, if it's your Amazon device, whatever. If it goes on the internet, if it's your doorbell, if it's your oven, if it goes on the internet, it needs to have automatic firmware updates. Because I have 60 devices on the internet in my house. I'm not going to go around to each one every week and check and see if
I have 22, and right. They said that will help you with all your devices. Well, what does that mean?
Help me what? Help me do what? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Eero, this is one of the reasons, and all the mesh routers pretty much have the same policy, automatic updates, and they update a lot. I mean, if you look, you'll be getting updates, you know, weekly, and that's probably right.
Well, take it from the listeners, take it from me. I would rather spend another $100 to get something.
On the other hand, the Blackhawks are great. I mean, Nighthawks, they're great. They're nice routers. You got it updated. That's the main thing. Just keep an eye on it and, you know, update it. If you hear of a security issue, update it. You know, just that's what you're going to have to do. And you'll need a new router. But the other thing is people assume routers should last 10 years. No. You're going to need a new router in a few years anyway.
I got four in the last 5 years. Yeah. So it's not worth it.
Routers burn out fast. You're going to be buying a new router every few years. And look, internet access is so important nowadays to us. I think it's worth
Absolutely. Tell my wife.
There's a good reason, honey. He's not just buying routers because he likes to. This is for you. I'm doing this for you. That's what I tell my wife. I'm doing this for you, baby. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the help, and I'm glad I didn't pay for it.
Yeah, so my pleasure. All right, take care. Yeah, that's a good idea. I should start charging. No, I don't have to. You know why? We got great sponsors. Let's move on to, I think it's going to be our last call today, Chuck in Stallion Springs, California. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Leo. How you doing? Hey, Leo. Yeah. I got an Amazon Echo for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I see on the internet that you can control various electronic devices, you know, replace your remotes with these devices. And they're relatively cheap. They're like $25, $24. And I want to control my stereo, which is in another room. And I was wondering if these actually would work like...
Gee, now that's interesting. Here's what I would recommend. I don't know what's out there, but for $99, I would recommend something called the Harmony Hub. And
I've seen it.
Yeah, it works with Echo, and it controls your whole thing. You can say, Echo, I want to watch the football game. It will go to the channel on your cable box. It will turn on your AV receiver, set it to the right input, turn on the TV, set it to the right input, turn the volume to whatever. It does the whole thing, and it's all from your voice.
I've had the Harmony remotes before.
Oh, yeah, you understand.
I'm very pleased with the way they work.
So the Harmony Hub is, it's not a remote. It's designed to work with a smartphone. So it's just a little glob that you put in their cabinet, and they even have other infrared blasters that you can distribute if it doesn't see. But really, I found one blob, everything can see it, because it's just like a massive infrared light. And you control it with your phone, but it also works with voice. And it is amazing. Oh, my gosh. Now, I don't know about the cheap devices, but
they say they work the same way. They say that Alexa, change channel to Fox. Alexa, turn on the TV. So very similar.
Maybe they do. I don't have any experience with them. I'd say spend the $100. You know how Harmony is. The advantage Harmony has is they have a massive database of every kind of AV gear because they've been doing this for so long. So it's much easier to set up. I'd spend the extra money and get the hub.
Well, thanks for your info.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. A lot of times you see these kind of cheap Chinese clones on Amazon or eBay. Yeah, and they're so cheap. But I don't know. Where are you going to get the support? How, you know, stuff like that. Are we out of time? That can't be. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. I appreciate it. And come back again. We'll do it all again next week. You know, lots of tech to talk about. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. I think that guy just came on just to change all the channels to Fox. You think that was the point of the call? I don't know. Maybe. That's pretty funny. He really wanted to do that. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.